The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Welcome to the Innovation Economy Podcast, where we look at the factors that drive business growth, including how people, processes, platforms, and places work together to create the future of work. I'm your co-host, Bonnie Habian. I'm a CMO, author, speaker, branding expert, and passionate content creator. This episode is part of our Brand the Change series, which focuses on how entrepreneurs and engaged employees can leverage their personal brand to support their company, showcase their skill sets, and create value. To listen to the latest episodes or sign up for the Innovation Economy newsletter, go to innovationeconomy.show or click follow on your favorite podcast app to make sure you hear the latest episodes. And now, onto the show. Today, we're going to talk about entrepreneurs. No, that wasn't a mispronunciation. Entrepreneurs have significantly evolved since the term was coined in the 1980s, and the evolution of the entrepreneur represents a shift towards more entrepreneurial organizational cultures, signaling an understanding of the importance of innovation in the long-term success of a business. To help me discuss this topic, I'd like to welcome Adam Chen, president of AmendedLink, a residential experience operational platform for multifamily communities. Adam is also the host of Innovation Economy's Entrepreneurship Series, so he is already part of the Agile Brand podcast family. Welcome, Adam. Let's jump right in. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Bonnie. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, I am so excited because I love the whole concept of it being an entrepreneur. But sometimes when I say that, people are like, well, no, what do you mean entrepreneur? I'm like, no, entrepreneur. Well, what is that? And so I'm going to start up with letting you describe exactly what that term means.
Yeah, so entrepreneur, I think, is something that that response that you just shared is not entirely surprising. I think that's part of the reason why we've endeavored on creating this podcast series. We ultimately need to give this word more press.
For sure.
Now, I think entrepreneur to me, and this is something we'll explore further in the Innovation Economy podcast series, to me, it means really two things. You know, the first thing I would say is, at its core, it's an innovator, mm-hmm. right? And I come from a technology background, so I'm a bit biased, I think, towards, you know, technological innovation or coming up with new software and things like that. But if we take a step back, right, innovation can happen in a variety of different fields and disciplines. You know, I guess, you know, if we kind of bounce that off the definition of an entrepreneur, it's somebody that's creating a new business, right? A new business doesn't necessarily need to be groundbreaking, right? It just needs to be something new, right? Creating a new revenue stream or maybe serving a new set of customers.
Exactly.
So I see that in the same way as entrepreneurship, right? It's how can you take that entrepreneurial spirit, if you will, which I think a lot of companies like to talk about. That's what an entrepreneur is. How do you give somebody the ownership internally to do something new, create a new business line? But it also can be the technological innovation. It can be a new way of doing things. Maybe it's streamlined operations. But that's really the first thing I would say. The second piece, I think, about entrepreneurship, and again, it's relative to, I think, what people commonly think of as an entrepreneur, is I think it has something to do with risk. I think intrinsically, a lot of, I know you, myself, and you know a lot of people I've had the pleasure to work with throughout my career, they want to make a difference in the world, you know? And the reality is that can happen both by creating your own thing, as an entrepreneur, but it can also happen. You can still fulfill that, you know, that intrinsic drive to create something, if you will, right, within an organization. And that's really what entrepreneurship is, being an entrepreneur in an organization.
And that leads me right into what I was going to ask. You know, I think that is a great way of describing someone who wants to really go out there and make a difference, but they want the stability. So I do think that is definitely a line that comes between saying, okay, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to start my own business, I'm going to risk my own capital, or, you know what, I think I can make a difference, but really earn a good paycheck, make a difference, but still get that fix, as you would say, because entrepreneurs have this, you know, real interest in wanting to be able to get something that's going to fulfill them in a way that's meaningful.
Absolutely. I love the concept of kind of risk tolerance. You know, I've in the past worked, you know, in finance on the peripheries, and, you know, it's something that's been kind of ingrained in my head. But yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, being an entrepreneur carries some weight to it, right? It's a big decision. And a lot of people, I think, aspire to be entrepreneurs, but have some fear or maybe some hurdle that they just can't get comfortable with. Maybe they have a family to support, right? You need, to your point, have the stability to continue to live your life. And being an entrepreneur, sometimes, I know there's a lot of press, especially recently with side gigs, right? And maybe some of that stuff can turn into it. But I think the traditional, you know, way that we think about entrepreneurship is you've got to make this big leap of faith, right? You have to raise capital, right? Maybe you take out some debt and you've got to try something new that's maybe unproven. And I think that, you know, holds a lot of people back. You know, this is just another path. You know, you can find that within organizations too, and have that security.
It does. It can be a very, very scary premise. And I think, you know, what I'd like to understand a little bit is when did entrepreneurship start? And were there any sort of trends, I don't know, any kind of evolution, something that happened probably historically that spurred it to become more widely known by corporate America?
Well, I guess I'd argue that it's not really widely known even today, fast forward. You know, I think, as you alluded to, I think in the intro, right, I think it was first coined in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, maybe in some academic white papers, you know, the specific authors, you know, escape me at the moment. But it's kind of been on the peripheries of corporate culture, I think, for a long time. I think entrepreneurship without the name has existed, you know, for all time. Ever since business started, there's always this idea of I need to, you know, expand my business and who's the people that are behind that, right? I think it's really just in the 80s that we gave some definition to it. But by no means, I think, is that common, you know, jargon in any industry today. And I think that's part of the purpose of what we're trying to do here. I still hear in my own experience internally, you know, organizations say, yeah, we're hiring an entrepreneurial spirit. Well, we're saying the same thing. Let's just give it its own definition, its own word, right? And I think that's kind of where we are. So it's existed forever, but I think still we're on the you know, the cusp of making it more common parlance.
Could you tell me a little bit, when do you think, you know, if you look at a person, can they both be entrepreneurial and entrepreneurial? Is that possible?
You know, it's interesting because we're trying to draw distinctions between these two words. But I think when you look internally inside a person, right, what drives them, I think they're really two sides of the same coin, ultimately, right? It's really, I think, the environment in which you can fulfill that intrinsic drive that defines whether you're an entrepreneur or an entrepreneur. So I think the answer is absolutely yes, you can be both. And I know in my own experience, I would call myself an entrepreneur, but on the other side, I've also started my own businesses before. And I think it's really a continuum there, right? And especially if we think about risk, that, you know, perhaps your risk tolerance changes over time. Perhaps, you know, maybe you're an entrepreneur to get started because you don't have, you know, the security, you know, saved up. But as you, you know, advance through your career, all of a sudden, you know, maybe you are willing to take that leap of faith that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I think you can see someone that may have worked for 20, 30 years in corporate America, or something happens where they become such a great entrepreneur, and perhaps they've been able to save up enough money on the side where they feel, okay, you know what, I'm secure enough to go out and try this on my own.
Yeah.
And I think you do see that, I would say even more so post-pandemic, you're seeing a lot of solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. people starting on their own. But I've also seen, I see a little bit more of the growth in that entrepreneurship spirit internally. And people may not know what to call it. They may not know that's what it is, but I do believe that is in fact what it is, which brings me to ask you, you said that you realized that you were an entrepreneur at some point. Tell me a couple of the qualities that you think make up an entrepreneur and maybe one or two, three things that kind of, you know, came to you at a point where you said, you know what? I think I'm a little different. I think I'm quite entrepreneurial, but I'm going to stick where I am working to use those skills here.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think if I look back at my own kind of career, I think the things that stand out is, you know, I've mentioned this kind of intrinsic drive. I think I've always been, you know, the person that maybe challenges authority or wants to break paradigms or wants to look at, you know, something from a different lens. That's always been core to who I am as a person. Now, I don't think that's a requirement to be an entrepreneur, but I think that is the thing that has driven me to be entrepreneurial, right? And I have that aspiration to try to make positive change. So those are some, you know, some kind of behavioral traits or, you know, some things about me that's kind of like set me up for success in this area, I suppose. But I think some other, you know, talents, qualities, however you want to call it, maybe is, you know, the ability to put on blinders, I think is really important sometimes. You know, I think when it comes to, you know, evaluating risk even, right, you're never going to be able to mitigate every single risk. If you're thinking about starting a business, right, it's overwhelming to think about all the things that could go wrong, right? So I think there's this like thing about how do you just kind of, whether it's focus, you know, stay focused or just put the blinders on to some of the negative things that could potentially happen, right, allows you to just kind of push ahead, right? So being able to overcome those obstacles. And I think the thing that kind of relates between entrepreneurship and entrepreneurship maybe is, you know, being personable in some way. I think anytime you start a business, and I think any successful entrepreneur or entrepreneur will tell you, you can't do it alone. How can you be personal enough or, you know, see the value in others and build a high-performing team around you to support what it is you're trying to do is really important. You did mention solopreneurs, and absolutely, that is a pathway too. Maybe it's a prerequisite to some of what we're talking about, right? But I would argue that a solopreneur will have an upper limit, right? There is going to be some cap at some point where you're going to need to, you know, turn into maybe what we're calling now an entrepreneur, an entrepreneur, right?
Well, I think that's interesting. So I have two questions for you, two follow-ups. Can you be an entrepreneur if you're introverted, right? And is that something where if you're very kind of keep to yourself, you're not bringing people together? That is an important skill set to be able to bring people together to create change. So I don't know. It's a curious type of thought. So I just wanted to put it out there.
Yeah, I think absolutely you can be introverted and be an entrepreneur. I think what it comes down to is not can you yourself embody every single trait to make a business or an internal, you know, change initiative successful. It's really about self-awareness and how you can surround yourself with complementary skill sets, right? It's being self-aware enough to know what your strengths are. And those strengths might be in innovation, ideation, you know, maybe it's technical, right, to develop something. Either way, you had a good idea, right? That doesn't necessarily mean you need to also be the person that socializes that idea, right? So it's about finding complementary, I think, people to surround yourself with to ultimately make the outcome that you're trying to drive successful.
Yeah, I think that's really, really a point well taken, because as you had said, with a solopreneur, you can only go so high until you all of a sudden say, okay, I need some people that are going to help me scale. I'm tapped out. I need some other resources. And I've also been and have experienced leaders in different parts of my career who may have been somewhat quiet, but they were a strong presence because, boy, they had credibility and were able to get things done. And people responded to that, even though they may not have been the most vocal person in the group. They were with their actions and their results. So I think that's a very good point in what you said in being able to really have a lot of different personalities. But if you are self-aware, know what you need to have around you and have some of those other key skills, that's going to help you.
I want to make sure you know about the other podcast from the Agile brand, the award-winning show about marketing strategy, technology, and the customer experience, and building the brand of the future. It's called The Agile Brand with Greg Kilstrom, and in it we talk with leaders at some of the world's top brands, the MarTech platforms that are leading the way, and other thought leaders in marketing, CX, and digital transformation. Now in its fifth year with over 400 episodes and 1 million downloads, make sure you check it out with new episodes Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. To listen to the Agile Brand with Greg Kilstrom podcast, you can find it wherever you listen to podcasts, or you can go to theagilebrand.show. That's theagilebrand.show. Now let's get back to the show.
So let me ask, what types of companies do you think work well for that entrepreneurial spirit? I don't know if you've got to, right, every single company in this day and age you would think would embrace that. But are there some companies more than others that really say, hey, I want that entrepreneurial spirit working for me?
Yeah, I think if you ask any leader in an organization, they'll probably say that they have a very entrepreneurial spirit within their companies. I don't know if that's true, in all instances. I think it goes back to a little bit of that self-awareness about the organization and the culture, perhaps, within your organizations. You know, as a little side tangent, right, I think what's influencing my view on this is my own career arc, right? I came out of undergrad, you know, guns a-blazing, and I started my own company thinking I could do website consulting, right? And I quickly realized that I didn't have all the skills necessary to be successful at that. So I started out very entrepreneurial, if you will, but I was self-aware enough to realize my limitations. And then I started to become an entrepreneur. And the bulk of my career certainly was, you know, affecting change within organizations. It's really only recently, I would say in the past, you know, half dozen years or so, that I've started to feel a little bit more confident in my, you know, total breadth of abilities to now start thinking about new things and being entrepreneurial. So I would even call, you know, what we're doing here with the podcast, you know, my next entrepreneurial venture in some ways, right? And it's great to be, you know, partnered with you, but kind of going back to my learnings from that experience, right? I didn't necessarily know when I, you know, say failed in my first business that I was like, oh, you know, here are the exact gaps I need to fill. It wasn't like that, right? It was only through working in a variety of different organizations that I started to be able to pick up on those things. And it's only looking back that I can probably even name them. And I think two things really, you know, rise to the surface when it comes to companies, right? And what's that look like? And it's all rooted in company culture, right?
Oh my goodness. Yes. Yes. Go ahead. I really feel passionately about that, but you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I think it comes down to transparency and accountability, mm-hmm. right? And I mean that in a couple of ways, right? So let's talk transparency for a second, right? There needs to be clear understanding of where the business is going. What is the business's goals, right? Are there new markets you're trying to expand into? Or is it a product that needs to be developed more? Whatever that is for your particular organization, you need to make sure that every single person within the organization understands the direction you're going, right? So that everyone can rally behind that, right? Not everyone in an organization is going to be your leader, your entrepreneur, so to speak, right? But everyone needs to understand the role they play, right? And the responsibility that they have in furthering the mission of the company. So I think that's leadership's primary responsibility is to set that vision and not just set it, but to ensure understanding of that vision, right? So that's what I mean by transparency. And then driving an accountability culture. When you've defined now those responsibilities, you need to make sure that people fulfill those goals, right? And keep pushing that ball forward, right? And if somebody doesn't do that, you need to also make sure if it's not a good fit in your organization, you need to also kind of usher them out, right? Or coach them out of the organization in some way, right? You don't want to, and I'm using that word specifically coaching because, right, we're all people, right? And sometimes, you know, I think people are vilified in organizations for not meeting the need. And the question is like, is that really just on the employee? Mm-hmm. Maybe there's also some accountability of leadership, making sure they understand what it is that they're trying to accomplish or what, you know, the upside is for them, right? So maybe it's just a, you know, misalignment of expectations really, or maybe the fit is just purely not right. So let's call it that, right? And accountability means people that aren't a good fit are held accountable to drive that vision. But then the people that aren't a good fit, you know, you need to demonstrate to the rest of the organization that, you know, it's just a fit problem. It's not that this person is not good, right? And it's that type of culture, I would say, in a company that makes people feel safe. And I think that's the ultimate outcome that fosters, you know, entrepreneurship.
I think that is really just 100% accurate, all of the various things that you said. I think communication has never been more important in a culture. And I also believe that if you are someone that maybe has certain values that make you who you are, you really are doing yourself a service if you ensure the company where you work has similar values. I have found that is more and more important. But I want to ask you something about this entrepreneurship spirit. They are a little different. If entrepreneurs can be a little different, they can be a little bit ruffle feathers. They can make some people feel uncomfortable because they're pushing change. And I know because of some of the things I've been involved with in my career, people don't like change. So how do you deal with that? Can you have too many entrepreneurs in a culture? And what is the impact of the entrepreneur spirit and the entrepreneur mentality with colleagues?
There's a lot of angles on that question. First off, I think within any organization, or maybe even within a team within an organization, it is about, you know, building upon that concept of fit. We need to make sure that there's complementary skill sets. You're absolutely right. Not everyone in an organization can be an entrepreneur. Just like not everyone in your organization is a rock star, and not every person in your organization is managerial material, right? Even if we draw a line there, right? Managers ultimately are trying to make other people better, right? And that is a very unique skill set that they have. But that doesn't mean that, you know, individual contributors can have an incredible depth of knowledge and skill to actually execute on some things that maybe the people manager can't do. So it's about first understanding, obviously, what you're trying to attain, but then finding the right mix of people and complementary skills that mesh together. And that could be a mix of different personality types. It could be a mix of different skills, right? And that's going to look different in every single initiative. You're right. Change is hard. Absolutely. I think, you know, the first and foremost, the entrepreneur that's driving that change needs to be resilient above all else, right? Mm-hmm. Because you don't know where that, you know, mm-hmm. the obstacles are going to come from or the resistance. And, you know, this, I think, dovetails back into culture a little bit, right? Change, people fear, and sometimes that's irrational fear. And even if they know it's irrational fear, it doesn't mitigate the fact that it's still fearful for some people.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? You know, let's take ChatGPT, right? Is all the rage right now, right? And people are so afraid that AI is going to take their jobs, right? That is a very fixed mindset way of looking at the world, right? We need to adopt an idea of like, if I don't do this, what other valuable things can I do, right? There are so many things that employees can bring to an organization and even in institutional knowledge and things, right? It's the idea that, you know, we can all grow together and this change is going to be positive. And I think that's, going back to culture, the important part, right, of the transparency and accountability is you're trying to make people feel safe, right? So if you have employees that are fearful because you tried to communicate some new thing that you're doing, right? That's a huge red flag that maybe your culture is not as healthy as you might think it is. So I would encourage anyone listening, if you see some of, you know, the resistance popping up in those areas, dig a little bit deeper and understand why, right? And see what the root cause really is, right?
Yeah. All right. Let me ask you this. And this is kind of an interesting question because you hear people say, I want to be a police officer. I want to be a teacher. I want to be a doctor. Are we going to hear someone say, I want to be an entrepreneur in 5 to 10 years? And if so, two-part question here. What is the salary trajectory of someone that has that mentality? So will we hear more about this in the future? Will it be more of a defined role? And what advice or guidance can you give to folks who are listening to say, you know what, entrepreneurs earn XYZ more, XYZ less, or this is the wave of the future?
You know, will people say, I want to be an entrepreneur when I grow up? Perhaps. I think that would make me incredibly happy to hear that. And I think, you know, and maybe it's used interchangeably in some people's mind, entrepreneur, entrepreneur, because really it's about I want to affect change. Maybe that's what they're really trying to say. But I think as entrepreneurship gains a little bit more, you know, commonplace in our language, right, and people start, you know, defining it as such, I think what's going to facilitate people saying that is the fact that you're seeing a lot of large organizations. I'm a little bit biased because of the tech background that I have, right? But you've got the barrier to entry is increasing in a number of different fields, right? Not all, right? And I'm not, but just in kind of this lens that I'm looking at it, right? If I want to start a new search engine, you know, that there's zero chance I'm going to be successful in that, right? So if I have some innovative idea in search, right, I'm going to say I want to be an entrepreneur at Google, right, or at Microsoft or some other, you know, maybe, you know, new player or upstart that's been well-funded, right? The chances of me trying to do a solopreneurship into an entrepreneur, you know, into an entrepreneurship in some fields is, it's just not going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, the barrier entry is something to think about if that is the type of discipline that you're in, right? And I see that's where maybe entrepreneurship spirit is fostered a little bit more and it gains a little bit more, you know, commonplace in our language.
Okay. All right. Well, this is my final question for you, because I think when I listen to podcasts, I want to know, hey, give me a couple of pieces of advice to make myself more successful, to position me better. So can you give me three pieces of advice that you would give to an entrepreneur to maximize their impact at their organization?
Yeah. I think from my lens and thinking about my own journey through entrepreneurship, what has set me up for success is really cultivating breadth in my skills, right? And gathering experiences over time. I think if I were to go back and try to define innovation, right, for a second, to me, most innovation is taking concepts that perhaps are tried and true or familiar in one arena and, you know, applying that in a new and novel way. So some of what has helped me be successful, both as an entrepreneur and entrepreneur, is maintaining some semblance of optionality and to being able to seize opportunity when it's presented to myself. I'm not going to sit here and say I've had a clear vision my entire career that I'm going to do this thing and I've never veered from that path. And I would debate somebody that says that that's how smooth it was, right?
So you're saying keep an open mind to seize that opportunity. That's number one.
Cultivate breadth in your skills and seek out new experiences and seek out new projects that expand that. I think the second thing is it's a little bit related to fear and it's related to opportunity cost, right? I think a lot of people fear, you know, if I don't keep this job, if I, you know, just stay under the radar, right? But you're thinking about it wrong, right? It's if I'm not working here, there's going to be some other place that I'm going to work. So it's not I'm going to get a salary to your earlier question or I'm not going to have a salary at all if I take a risk and try to push a new initiative, right? So consider opportunity cost. And then I think the final piece of advice, number three, would be fostering relationships. Mm-hmm. And this is something that took me a really long time to really understand the importance of, right? I started out my career as, you know, producer in a lot of ways, a creative and a coder, and I created things. And I thought my value was just tied to the things that I created, right? And it took me longer in my career to really understand that, right? It's not just what I can create, it's what the team can create. And the only way you can effectively manage a team is to create strong relationships, both up and down, right? And in a hierarchy. So your ability to be personable, like don't discount the needs to be able to interact with people. And you can be an introvert too and still do that, right? You can still foster
absolutely
relationships.
Absolutely. And this has been such a great conversation. I could really talk about this a lot longer. I want to thank you, Adam Chen, president of Amenity Link and host of Innovation Economy's Entrepreneurship Podcast. You can learn more about Adam and the Entrepreneurship Series by following the links in the show notes. Thanks again for listening to the Innovation Economy Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to subscribe on your podcast app of choice and leave us a rating so that others can find the show more easily. You can access more episodes of the show at www.innovationeconomy.show. The Innovation Economy is produced by Missing Link, a Latina-owned, strategy-driven, creatively-fueled production co-op. From ideation to creation, they craft human connections through intelligent, engaging, and informative content. Until next time, let's keep innovating.